Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your primetime host, Thomas. Primetime editor. And this is episode 111 of The Prerogative. And on this episode, while it's February, it's a month of love, which means it's time to look at some romantic animes, some harem animes, some fun animes, as we will be doing all month long. And we start off not with a title that actually has an English dub, because it's been yet to be licensed or brought over to America. This week I am covering one of my favorites, Princess Lover, 2009 series that has, I think, gotten much respect, and I think it deserves it, certainly. It came out July 5th, 2009, and ran until September 20th, 2009, to 12 episode run. We're going to talk about all that and more on this episode, and speaking of more, first thing I want to talk about is kind of a follow-up to last week's episode. As you know, I reviewed the seasons 1 and 2 of Ruby, the Rooster Teeth original animation by the late director Monty Hume, who, for those who've been following, passed away this past Monday. You know, these are always hard things to talk about. I don't want to say pure luck, because luck has nothing to do with it, and luck has nothing to do with anybody passing. It's pure coincidence that I just finally happened to get to reviewing it. And then I released it on Thursday, and I think the news dropped that weekend that he had been he's in the hospital. For those who know, apparently Monty Hume, the director of Ruby, among other things, as I talked about last week, passed away this past Monday due to complications of a surgery he went over the weekend. Apparently, he had an allergic reaction to the procedure or something, and it put him in a coma, and his body was never able to recover, which is an absolute terrible thing. I mean, of all things, because of a medical procedure, you know? An allergic reaction to, I mean, something wasn't sterilized properly or something, and anybody dying of any way is horrible, but in particular when you're in the hospital, in the care of doctors, the one place you shouldn't die when you go in living for just something, apparently, again, we don't know what the procedure was or what it was. Obviously, that is private information. I don't think it's going to be released. If it does, I guess we'll find out then. Not a lot of information other than, you know, the statements given by Rooster Teeth is pretty much what's known. it's, again, he was such a, to a lot of people, he was an inspiration. And to me, he was an up-and-coming animator who had a bright future for him. I mean, to me, he was on that leading edge of those amateur animator that I thought were really revolutionizing the industry and showcasing that you didn't have to be Disney or that any one of those to put on good productions and how you could entertain people in different facets as well, through different styles and different techniques. And to lose him so soon, way before his time, it's just heartbreaking. And somebody, one of my friends on Facebook, it's a punch to the gut, and that's absolutely what it is. It's like a punch to the gut. I remember last week, I was raving about the guy and how much I was looking forward to his future, and now he's gone. And it's just one of those things that doesn't seem fair in life that, you know, people like this get taken so early, who deserve so much more and get to deserve to live a longer life. So it's so unfortunate and so horrible what had happened. My heart and my prayers go out to his surviving family, to his friends over at Rooster Teeth. I mean, I can't think of any situation that can be any harder right now for those people. Certainly there are questions that, you know, about Ruby, and he's been known to be working on some stuff for Dead Fantasy. Of course, that's all stuff that's, like, later, way later down the road will probably be discussed. But it's just such a heartbreaking situation, you know. To see somebody so talented and so young taken such a young age, and I keep bringing this before his time. And you say that, you know, I know that's a sort of cliche saying about when anybody dies. I remember George Carlin making the joke, like, oh, it was before his time, like, he was 91. But in this case, I think it's prevalent being that he's only 33. Only 4 years more than me, in fact. Maybe a little bit more. But it's just, yeah, to be taken at such a young age, it's like, wow. Just a punch in the gut, it's heartbreaking, it's everything you expect it to be, because it's hard.
Fuck you.
And
who cares?
Well, whatever you think is best, brother.
Fuck you.
Take care. Like I said, my prayers go out to the family. Fuck you. Who cares? It goes out to everybody working at Rooster Teeth, all his friends. Not that my podcast, in those scheme of things, mean that. My podcast can just, if there's anybody who hasn't watched Ruby and my podcast by listening to it, and convinces them to go check it out, and when they never had, I mean, yeah, that podcast has done some good. If there's anybody who's a friend, you know, anybody who's a fan, I hope the last podcast you enjoy and it reminds you just how good. It's a good tribute, if nothing else, to how good his work is. You know, there really is no way to segue from that. It's something I wanted to address because I happened to do that review last week. And then this happened, and it's so unfortunate. So, you know, again, like I said, there's really no segue from that to the happy, very joyful, very fan service, etchy filled series that is Princess Lover. But I'm gonna try. So, like I said, this week's primary review is gonna be. Primary, but there's more than one review. But yeah, the title we're reviewing is Princess Lover, as I said, from July 5th, 2009 to September 20th, 2009. As part of the summer season. A 12-episode series. Princess Lover, again, like I said, has never been licensed by anybody and brought over to America. Now, Princess Lover just has a very unique history as a property. Because Princess Lover is one of those animes that, you know, its initial start out was as a Japanese visual novel. In this case, it was a Japanese adult visual novel adult game developed by Ricota. It was originally released on June 27th, 2008. Of course, and mind you, it had become very popular. So it has several different property and relations to the anime. It has two different mangas. In fact, the game itself was re-released in an all-ages release for the PlayStation 2 in January 28th, 2010. Which shows you how popular it became. That anytime an adult visual novel is so popular that it has an all-ages release and it has light novels and mangas and animes and internet radio shows, you know that because of popularity, and mind you, that comes because of art. You know, it's got a wonderful, beautiful art style. It's got an OVA, and I think the OVA is probably the primary reason, probably why it's not been picked up, along with its adult history. I have played the adult game, surprise, surprise, and I have seen the OVA, which, let's not mention it is an H anime. There's an OVA, not going to get really into it, but it was done by Studio and pretty much had H anime scenes. It was erotic, had sex scenes, and all that stuff. I think that is one of the primary reasons why it hasn't been picked up, because of the sort of H anime nature of some of its history, which in its own way is hypocritical, because certainly there are other there are titles that have way more etchy fan service than this. You would think something that is of adult game nature would have, I mean, mind you, there is the fair share of fan service. I mean, there's a lot of, there is nudity in abundance and everything, but at the same point in time, it's not like every second of the episode. There are series where you have nudity and female nudity and sexual jokes all thrown around the entire series. I mean, Panty and Stockings, I'm Looking at You. And certainly there have been other games who have had adult visual novels, or that started out as adult visual novels. All those reasons, that's why I sort of think about, you know, it's that OVA. Because mind you, I think in particular how it works, in particular with Funimation, is when they get a property, they want to get the OVA. And mind you, I don't think the OVA is tied in with the property. It may be, and maybe that's why. But at the same point in time, I think maybe companies like Funimation and Sentai Filmworks and all of them may be confused that the OVA is not a part of the anime. The anime was done by GoHands, and then the OVA was done by a different group. It was done by Hood Entertainment under the name of Public Enemies, and released by the adult anime label L. Where, like I said, GoHands was the animation production studio. Frankly, go over why it hasn't been, and really, I am pretty much surprised that it hasn't been licensed. It's a really good series. I mean, really, I am shocked that Funimation hasn't picked this up, to be quite honest. I really think Funimation should pick it up. It just shocked me that it hasn't been licensed. It's one of those series that probably will never be licensed, you know. There are a lot of good anime series that have never been licensed. This is one of them. So, definitely a unique day for us, as we're going to be reviewing something. A Japanese dub. Not dub, but Japanese subtitled series. For all those who may go out and look for it, that's definitely going to be something that's probably going to hinder many of you to try and find this series. Is the fact that not only is it not licensed, it's not on Crunchyroll, it's not on Hulu. Pretty much you have to get it, you know, off torrents, or buy a or you know, buy an import, you know, at this point, which, you know, again, probably another reason why a lot of people haven't heard of it. And again, that's really sad because this is a really good series, as we'll get into. Why don't we say we get into the review and then I'll show you exactly why this series is good. Our story follows Tepe Arima, who's a young high school boy who, a young high school senior, mind you, who recently lost his parents in a traffic accident. An accident that was supposedly caused by people who were hunting some people down. He finds out that he has a grandfather and becomes adopted by his grandfather, Ethan, who is the head of the Arima Group Corporation. He then transfers to Shushkin Gakuin, a high school for only wealthy students. Tepe's new life as a celebrity starts as he goes on the hunt for his parents' killers. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Princess Love. Solid. They're you know, print. You know, the opening theme definitely has its own uniqueness to it. I think the melody, the use of the piano, a lot more use of strings, which are definitely could be the prevalent instruments in both the opening, closing, and in the score itself. That gives it this more classical feel, this elegant feel to everything. Definitely works in its favor. It's sort of a very elegant Japanese little pop song that worked very well for the series. I enjoy it. I enjoy the melody, especially that back half. We go da 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 da. You know, that part of it I particularly enjoy because there's a nice build-up to it, and I think it works very well for the series. And then, of course, you have the closing theme. It's very enjoyable, too, and it's got a good theme to it. They're not the greatest intro and closing themes by far. They definitely have a lot to work with. You know, they're just pretty solid. I think it's the best word I can look for. It's solid. It's like, I don't think these closing or opening and closing themes are gonna blow anybody's mind, but they're certainly solid and they certainly work for the series. And again, that's the most important part. You know, we're not reviewing this to see, oh, would you buy this opening theme on its own. I mean, it's great when that you would, but at the same point in time, the most important part is that it works for the series, and it certainly works for the series. And then, of course, you have the score, which is very nice. The score has a very very nice subtlety to it. A lot of mood-setting pieces at the majority, and for the most part, they do use a lot of silence as well. This is very traditional Japanese production. To use a lot of quiet scenes and let the, you know, the situation fend for itself. But they do use music. The fun music is very fun. There's a particular piece that's and used in numerous ways that I very much like. It's a great little mood setter that uses a combination of piano and violins, and it's just, it's very well done. Overall, the score I find to be very enjoyable. Again, it's very subtle, stays in the background, and enhances the scenes, as any solid good score is supposed to do. So again, we go back to that term of being solid, which definitely the score and the opening and closing theme for Princess Lover definitely is. It's very solid, it's very good, and all of it does its job well, depending on which job that part of the music is supposed to be doing. Let's move on to animation, and let's talk about the overall art style. I love the overall art style. I love the thin line work again. As I look up the artist's name, I apologize. I'm trying to find the artist's name here. So, the main artist, or for the art direction and character design, was Kei Komori. He would also work on Ricota's other title, which would go on also to have an anime. An anime that is, by the way, on Crunchyroll right now called Rakure Romance. It's about jousting and everything. You know, he has a very unique, very defined art style. All the, you know, a lot of use of thin line work along with solid bold line work, and mixing it up very well. Actually, it's more towards that solid bold that gives it this very sort of full figured approach to the character designs that works very well. In certain indications, of course, it gets thin, but very well done. Makes it have this more realistic feel to the character's designs, and to the overall art style as well. Very beautiful. Has just a great eye for beauty. You know, throughout this series, regardless of where they are, whether they be in Amarant Hill's tower, whether they are in a city, because there's an episode where they go out on a date. And again, this is a harem anime, but they go to a city bay where there's a, you know, big Ferris wheel and everything, and you have hot springs episode, you have them on just no matter where they go, no matter what the scene is, there is just a beauty and an elegance to the overall art style. And again, it's that combination of both thin and crisp and solid and bold. And there's a nice fusion between it that works very well. The color schemes, I think, work very well. Plays with a lot of colors, a lot of bright coloring. Again, this is a very bright series in that nature. It's a very, there's a lot of fun. And mind you, there's some serious to it. And I think that's what makes the seriousness, work. I think you're lulled by the art style into a false sense of sort of what this series is going to be, and there's a very engaging story that's put on afterwards. And there are certainly points to where it gets a bit more, because of the mood, a bit more dark, and I think his use of color in the series, or at least by the animation studio, following probably his direction, was done very, very well. So yeah, overall, I love the overall style of Princess Lover. And that really leads into the character designs. I love the character designs. Let me start with Tepe, because so often with harem anime, you want to start with, of course, the females. In particular, one where it's a female surrounding a guy. But with here, there's definitely, I want to start with a guy, because again, I also go back to the fact that when this came out in 2009. If you've listened to this podcast before, You know that I'm one that I've said, like, 2005 to 2009 was an absolute rough time for anime in my mind. Certainly this came at the tail end of it, and this came during the summer, and then, you know, mind you, that winter would be the start at winter, that 2010 winter season. You know, I've gone on record saying I think 2010 is one of the best overall years for anime since, I thought it was that since 2004, and pretty much in a long time, and really revived what I felt was a struggling anime industry. And again, that was not to say that there was no good titles, and Princess Lover is an example of some of the good titles that did come out during this period of, I like to call it a period where the Japanese sort of forgot what got them where they are, and were trying to be a bit too international in their productions. I see that in Gurren Lagann, Code Geass, among other things, a Death Note. But Princess Lover was just everything that is, I think, great about a good, solid Japanese harem anime. And I think one of the things that made it unique was you've had, part of what really hurt that time span was harem anime. You know, harem, there had not been a real good harem anime for a while. I mean, and there were some good ones. You know, you had Rosario Vampire that came out this time, and it's solid. I mean, I've reviewed it before. It's a very solid series. But really, all the protagonists were pretty much the same. You know, here, though, you had a very different male protagonist, as we'll get to in story. And it started with his character design. And just, he was a bit more boyish, a bit, had a bit of femininity to him. He was much more of a pretty boy in a certain way. And he just had, but at the same time, you know what I like to compare him to? He had that Peter Parker look. And not in that he looked like Peter Parker, but Peter Parker had this look to him that, like, just appealed to everybody. And Tappy just has this look, that Peter Parker feel to it, to where his look just appeals to everybody, I think. With the spike hair and the slimness and everything, I think it works very, very well. Then, of course, you have the princesses, as we'll call them. Not all of them princesses, but, you know, the first one is, you know, Princess Charlotte Hazelnik. And again, I love the color scheme. The pink and the white, I think, work so well. I mean, and that's, again, because that's like the main dress you see her in, like, the title card. But, you know, again, the pink hair, I think, works very well for her personality and everything. And again, just the overall body design, I think, works very well for what her character is. The same can be said for Charlotte with the blonde hair. And then that predominant blue color that you see her a majority of the time in. That works very well. I love her hair design. I love the contrast then that Sectary Sika provides in contrast. Because again, you have these very European character designs. And that's again why I like that Charlotte and Sylvia, you know, do have the bigger bust. You know, you have Siki and Yu who are more Japanese feminine, and then you have Charlotte and Sylvia that are more European feminine, and there's a great contrast there. And again, Yu's design, whether it be in the school outfit or as a maid, works very well. There's a very maternal aspect to that character design. I also love the grandfather. I think his design, you know, you see him pretty much all the time. Black, gray, and white, and it works very well in connection with the idea that he is this character. He's not going to change much. He may bend, but he's not going to break and change. The colorfulness of Hartman. There's almost a fabulous feel to his character design, which should be a very telling point that he's going to be a villain. Because again, that's a very common trope, you know, that of the, you know, male villain being very feminine. Mind you, you have a hero that's very feminine as well, but indications, whether true or not. Overall, I love all the character designs. I think they're done very, very well. Just very solid, and every character feels real and has a lot of good weight to it. I love the fan service that is provided with these character designs, because I think it's wonderful. And again, it's funny, and it makes the series enjoyable. And surprisingly enough, there's solid action anime, to whether it be them showing a sword fight scene or them showing a chase scene. The action scenes in this series are extremely well done. Again, that goes to why this is, a very confusing series for some people. Or I should say an advanced series, and not for everyone in its own way, because, again, you come in thinking it's a harem, but really there's focused more mostly on everything but the harem in its own way. And part of that is the action. You have these chase scenes and these sword fights and everything, and it's all well done. You can easily follow the action. It's beautiful to look at. It's not the greatest by any means, and I say that because certainly there are other titles where the main focus is the action, and that's their bread and butter. But again, this series does so many different things and brings them all together well done. And the action animation, I think, is very much a proof of that. And, I kind of mentioned the backgrounds and special effects before. Again, the backgrounds are just gorgeous. They do a really good job with the special effects as well. But the backgrounds, like I said, it's just beautiful to watch this series and look at the backgrounds. They do a lot of mood setting shots to where they cut to show, location and everything. To set the mood to where they are and what the scene is to follow. And so they do a lot of that, and because of that, you have a lot of great background shots that work very well for what they're trying to accomplish. With that, that's it for animation. It's time for a break. I'm going to play a promo for some friends who podcasts you should be listening to. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. So I'll be right back, folks. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Superman.
Captain Marvel.
Batman.
It is 1985.
Robin of Earth 2.
Sergeant Rock.
The Legion of Superheroes.
This is the most eagerly awaited comic book event in 50 years.
Tommy Tomorrow.
Jonah Hex.
Commandy.
It will one day be called the greatest comic book event of all time.
Swamp Thing.
Wonder Woman.
The New Teen Titans.
The Haunted Tank.
Infinity Incorporated.
Worlds Will Live.
Green Arrow.
Worlds Will Die.
Supergirl.
The Flash.
And that is only the beginning.
The Justice League of America.
The All-Star Squadron.
The Huntress.
Ariane.
The Metal Man.
Firestorm. The Nuclear
Man. Outsiders.
Green Lantern.
The Blue Beetle.
The Crime Syndicate.
Warlord.
The Guardians of the Universe.
Tales of the Justice Society of America proudly presents...
And many, many more.
Crisis on Infinite Earths. The DC Universe will never be the same.
Coming January only at twotruefreaks.com.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Dad.
We need to record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
Twotruefreaks.com. Hey, Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
Greetings, podcast listener. Do you like... Gotcha, Mom! Or maybe...
Dragon Flame!
How about... Tatsuo! Ganido! Or...
In the year 1999, an abandoned alien battle fortress crash-landed on the planet Earth. Our most brilliant scientists and engineers spent the next 10 years reconstructing the damaged ship and studying its highly advanced space technology called Robotech.
Do you remember?
Our Star Blazers!
Or this?
The year is after Colony 195. As the world constantly changes in the chaotic era, there are two mobile suits that could turn humans into the ultimate weapon. The Wing Zero and the Epion.
Or maybe even this.
After the desire for blood rules all, the only hope left is the one they call D.
Or this.
Team, grappler ships dead ahead!
It wouldn't be fun otherwise. Let's do it!
Or...
If Cardis is allowed to be reborn, she'll destroy Marmo as well as Lodos.
Or have you seen the latest episode of...
And just like that, everything changed. At that terrible moment, in our hearts, we knew. Home was a pen. Humanity, cattle.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out Anime Freaks, hosted by Dr. Bill Robinson and me, Gene Hendricks. Anime Freaks is a monthly podcast covering all things anime. It is available at twotruefreaks.com and on iTunes under Two True Freaks Presents Anime Freaks.
Imagine the world you have known all your life suddenly begins to change.
The changes are almost imperceptible at first, but soon everything comes crashing around you.
Past and present contradict each other. History is no longer immutable.
Inconsistencies begin to pop up. New origins rendered stories only a few years old null and void.
Those long gone are no longer dead.
Worst of all, your friends and loved ones are vanishing or changing.
The very fabric of reality surrounding the DC universe is unraveling.
In Smallville, Jor-El and Lara have returned to take Superman back to an unexploded Krypton.
In Metropolis, Superman is faced with a multitude of Batmen.
The time stream, made fragile by countless twists and myriad travels, is now spinning out of control. Time is running out. Quickly.
Only the greatest heroes of every era and reality can stop this crisis in time.
And stop it they must, or the DC Universe will cease to exist, perhaps never to have existed at all.
The heroes and villains of the DC Universe are facing their
Zero Hour.
In 1994, DC published Zero Hour, Crisis in Time, a five-issue miniseries designed to fix some of the continuity issues that had cropped up since the conclusion of the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
This was a huge deal, and because of that, and because Superman played such a large part in that story, From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, hosted by Jeffrey Taylor
and Michael Bailey,
will be covering the Superman issues, as well as Zero Hour itself.
We will also be looking at all of the official crossovers to the series, in addition to devoting several episodes to the follow-up event, Zero Month, where Superman meets a brand new enemy.
Conduit.
Zero Hour.
Zero Month.
Only at From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. From Crisis to Crisis can be found at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com, and is part of the Superman Podcast Network, which is located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Also be sure to check out the Fortress of Baileytude, which is located at www.fortressofbaileytude.com. There you will find new episodes of From Crisis to Crisis, as well as all kinds of fun bits of business connected to Zero Hour and Zero Month.
Hey there, and welcome back. And before we get right back into it with acting, I just want to go back a little bit over animation, because I don't think I fully was able to vocalize my views on, you know, why the animation was good. I mean, like I said, it is just gorgeous. The character designs are beautiful and gorgeous. Backgrounds are beautiful and gorgeous. The overall style, I just think, is beautiful and gorgeous. It's solid. It's just a great style overall. Part of what lends it, in particular with the character designs, is not just the line work. Because I always talk about line work. It's also the shadowing. And, you know, the coloring of bodies and everything. And how, you know, the gradient of the colors, you know, to where, you know, under boob and... Yeah, I mean, okay, I think part of it is I'm trying to shy away from the whole sexual aspect of it. And that, I think, comes from my own defensiveness of trying to make people realize and give legit respect to harem and ecchi anime. But it's something I'm trying to overcome is, screw it. The sexuality is part of it. And it's a very elegant sexuality that the characters are given that works along with it. It just gives it this great feel. It's also the fact that they don't overuse that sexuality. I mean, don't get me wrong. As we'll talk about in story, there is use of sexual jokes. There is the use of ecchi, you know, ecchi fan service and the like. But for the most part, in most episodes, they don't overuse it. So I just wanted to go over that real quick before I get back into it with acting. Because I wanted to just solidify my viewpoint on animation and the fact that it is really, really good. Because I felt that I didn't quite vocalize how good it was. So I just wanted to solidify that point. With that, I hope y'all are ready for me to completely butcher Japanese names. Because it is time to get into acting, which means it's time to go over our cast list. So I was practicing this over the break, and let's just see if my practice paid off. With that being said, Kyle, if you're listening, and to any of my friends listening, please just cover your ears. Yeah. So first off, Takuma Terashima is Tepe Arima. Tepe Arima. Again, obviously this practice has worked out. Ryoka Yuzuki is Charlotte Hazelrink. Megumi Toyoguchi is Sylvia Von Holsen. By the way, if Ryoka sounds familiar, who voices Charlotte Hazelrink, you might recognize her from a very much more recent anime she did. An anime called Kill La Kill, where she plays the princess. You know, the one with the badass long blade that leads to school. Yes. Oh, God. Yeah, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, she plays her? I'm like, no. Wow, that's great range. Anyways, yeah, I brought it up for a fact, because again, Kill La Kill is premiering this Saturday on Toonami. Shameless plug. Anyways, back to our cast list. Amiri Kato is Sika Hojin. Yuki Masuoka is Yu Fujikura. Norio Wakamoto is Ishin Arima. I don't know why I'm having such difficulty with that name. Takehito Koyasu is Vincent Van Hosen. And of course, our antagonist, Juruta Kosugi, is Hartman Bisahim. It's French. If I can't speak Japanese, I sure know can't speak French. Overall, I really enjoyed the acting. Takuma was great as Tepe. Ryoka, again, I mean, Ryoka, Megumi, Emira, and Yuki, as the main cast, were just excellent. each played their character wonderfully. And again, they did it with just some great emotion and great, really, you felt like these characters were real. And the voices definitely lend itself to that. You know, I think there's a lot of great emotion that is expelled through Japanese language. Again, it's one of the reasons why I love watching both subs and dub. Because, again, it's two different styles and two different languages. But the thing that's the same is emotion. And just, again, they did a great job of all emoting a variety of different emotions through their voices. You absolutely believe that these characters were, you know, sincere and everything, and it just led to the believability of the characters. Takuma, I think, just had a great grasp of who Tepe is. Ryoka just, like, nailed this. She nailed Charlotte out of the park. I mean, Charlotte is this character that is, she's peppy and she comes off as ditzy, but she's not. It's sort of this farce. And she did a great job of just, like, of this character that's completely trying to put this face in front so others wouldn't have to worry about her. Who's so caring about others that she doesn't want others to worry about her. Megumi was just wonderful as Sylvia. Again, with that stern look on her. And, you know, Anne-Marie, just wonderful as it sort of, I guess it would be Tsunade is the technical cliched term here, but wonderful as that. And Yuki, again, just that natural, very maternal nature came out through that voice that really lent the character credibility. And, you know, the other, you know, the rest of the supporting cast did a wonderful job as well. But, you know, again, that main cast as the protagonist did just an absolutely fabulous and wonderful job. I don't have him on here. I wish I would have put him on here. But Nori, or at least the person who played Nori, I mean, it was just absolutely hilarious. Great comedic timing, this wonderful comedic voice. Mind you, all three of the males, they're for episode 6. In fact, all four of the males, excuse me, for the episode 6, which we will be getting into. And trust me when I say I cannot wait to get into it. It had just great comedic timing. As for the antagonist, I thought they did a great job. The female voice actress who played Josephine, I thought was great. She did a good job for a very small part. And, you know, Kusugi, I thought, did a great job as Hartman. Did a great job of, you know, presenting the sleazeball character that you so desperately wanted to be the villain. And then you felt for him because he wasn't a villain. And then he was the villain. And you cheered. It's like, he did a great job of making you hate him. Even though he's not given much character-wise to work with. Even though he in half the show. But he really doesn't. His part doesn't really come to, like, episodes 11 and 12. Episodes 10, 11, 12, excuse me. Anyways. So overall, I thought the voice acting was wonderful here. I thought they all did a good job. And again, really led to some great credibility in believing these characters' emotions. With that, let's move on to acting. Just one moment, folks. I gotta take a couple big gulps because, we're gonna be here a while. So let's move on to acting, and let's talk about the main plot and really how this show is. You know, it's fun. I made mention this before. It's funny how we had Oh My Goddess, and we both seen since I talked about how that series was a great example of a basic harem series. It's a great starter harem for people because, again, it really is covers. It's a fundamentally sound harem anime story. And if you want to understand what a harem anime story is about, that's the best place to start. Princess Lover, however, is on the completely other end of the spectrum. This is a very advanced harem story. This is, you know, as much as I am praising this anime, the one thing that, unfortunately, you know, I don't want to say hamper because it doesn't hamper the series, but it's also something that thoroughly in my mind is that this is not a series for beginners. This is not a series for those just getting the anime. This is an advanced anime. This is an advanced harem story. I say that because really, if you were just to hear the plot, there's nothing in this plot that necessarily sits there and tells you, oh, this is a harem. There's a lot of romance going on with it. Because really the main plot mostly is the mystery. It's, you know, the first arc is, you know, there are two concrete arcs in this plot of, you know, basically Tepe's revenge. And that's the main plot, is he wants to search down and hunt down his parents' killers. And so he allows himself to be adopted by his grandfather in hopes of using his power and money to find that, of course, not realizing what it would lead to. I mean, mind you, that was his thought process before he ends up meeting his grandfather, and he gets announced as the future heir, and that he has a fiancé, and so on and so on. But, you know, there's the first six episodes, and it really does end with episode six, which is the Hot Springs episode, which is, when you really think about it, of that arc, it's a great way to end that arc. But that is like sort of the acceptance arc. It's him getting into the school and being accepted by the four main female characters. In that sense, it sets up the harem part of the story well. But still, the main plot is that, you know, you need to form allies. And it's him forming allies. And then, from episode 7 onward, is that mystery plot and, you know, who's pulling the strings behind this dubious deal that's been going down on the border of Furmish and Hazelrink, which are two countries that, you know, Furmish is where Sylvia comes from and her father and her little sister, and Hazelrink comes from Hazelrink. You know, she is the princess of there. And who's behind the scenes in that whole mystery, which ultimately is, you know, as it turns out, you know, Hartbit is the one who's been behind not just his parents' murder, but he was apparently murdering a lot of prominent families. Mind you, he didn't realize that, you know. Again, this is to get back at Ishin, because Ishin embarrassed him when he was a child. In a way, you know, this great parallel that could have been touched on more and wasn't, and I wish it was, but they really kind of squished it in at the end, and it's something I wish they would have had more time. And mind you, I would have loved to see this series continue, but yeah, just the whole, you know, that Hartman is Tepe, but Tepe had, you know, took the right path, he took the wrong path, you know, in both cases. They were put in situations where they could have risen above themselves, and Tepe's the one who rised above himself. And which, in its own way, that is a large part of what Tepe's story is. Tepe starts off as this revenge-driven person. You know, and again, that's part of what makes him as a harem character so vastly different. He's not there to, you know, go to get to that 4-year college that's hard to get into, or to just find a place to stay, or, you know, just happens to be given a hotel that is, you know, filled with girls, or is going to be the next great god, or whatever, you know, or bought a soda for those who get that anime. Again, these are all these common harem elements. You know, here it's different. He doesn't start off that. The girls eventually surround him, but it's because of his actions in trying to gain allies. You know, and trying to smooth things over and to form allies. Again, but the first thing we see him doing after we're given the intro and everything, you know, I mean, first we see him with his family. We're given the chance to see that he's an everyday boy in Japan, nothing usual, and of course being left with that's the last time I saw my parents. Boom. Quickly followed by I'm Batman. No, I'm joking. but in a way, it's the Batman story. That just really dawned on me. That's probably the best way to describe his whole plot thread. It is the Batman story. It is him wanting revenge, him learning that revenge isn't what he needs, and realizing that he can become something bigger and rise to an occasion. Again, it's not done in exactly the way Batman's done, and again, Batman didn't have four beautiful girls to help him understand that, but still, in essence, it's the Batman story. Just without capes and costumes and all that jazz. But again, you're given that intro, and then you see him at at his parents' graves. And so what's the first thing after we see that? Well, we see him perform a rescue of Miss Charlotte. And, the thing I like about this, and again, is that, again, going to the themes of love and friendship and romance, which are very heavy themes, all are played with, in particular friendship, actually. One thing I think that makes this harem work is, again, the reason each girl ends up falling for him, it's done very naturally, and it's grown over time, and you understand completely why each character feels such a connection to him. With Charlotte, he's the first person to really not treat her like a princess. And that's not to say he treated her with disrespect, but it's like, to him, she was just a normal person. There's no royalty involved, there's no, and that made her feel special. When you're a princess, and again, I think this is something a bit political. I sometimes wonder if certain people get it. I find it strange how some people just don't get it. I mean, from my standpoint, it's like, okay, so what's her character? Well, her character is a princess. Well, why is she falling for him? Well, she's a princess, and, naturally she has all these duties, and so she has a lot of people just show her respect just because they know she's a princess. So, obviously, she becomes lonely because of that. Here's somebody willing to be her friend just because, they met. And so he became instantly special to her for that. She had this instant recognition of greatness within him by the fact that he was willing to help a complete stranger who was in trouble. She instantly recognized that. And again, Charlotte's character, just like I said before, the fact that she puts on that face because she wants her friends to smile and the people she cares about to smile. She, in a way, she's a great politician is what she is. She's a very powerful politician because she's able to quickly monetize a situation and deal with it accordingly. Perfect example of this is when she is caught. She's able to put herself in a situation where she isn't killed and where she is able to survive and pass information to Tepi. She instantly recognizes, two of the guards really adore her. And so she plays on that. She feigns ditziness and everything, and don'tsiness to play on their emotions. Though maybe saying play on their emotions because she does generally care. She has this great ability to see good in people, as proof by the fact that she's able to convince them, to do surgery and help heal Josephine in that final episode. She's able to turn them away from evil and so much, as perverted as those two guards were. But her ability to see good in people, again, she's a great politician, and yet she sees somebody who treats her as, for all females, it's the essence of being equal. And respect and all of that jazz that Tepe gives to them. For Charlotte, it's the fact that he treats her like a normal person, like he would normally with anybody else. And there's a great sense of pride that, that Charlotte has for that. With Sylvia, it's, you know, again, the equality aspect. You know, somebody with such great respect for her swordsmanship. And, you know, he could easily, you know, take advantage of Charlotte's advances by the way she flirts with him and doesn't. You know, there are things he does that connects with Charlotte, you know, that he is an honorable man, and that he is a great swordsman, and that he's respectful in the fact that, you know, he's willing to admit when he's lost. So she connects with him on that level, you know. Saika connects with him because, again, he doesn't treat her as if she's some Hoshin scum that betrayed the Arima family. You know, he's willing to instantly bury the hatchet and help start to try to heal wounds that were caused two generations prior. That really impressed her. Just his, and of course, with you, it was his ability to constantly move forward in the face of adversity that impressed her. And, you know, each female does also provide something to him as well, which helps his story along as well. He provides something to them that continues their story, and then they provide something to him that continues his story. Story-wise, it's equal trade. And, you know, for him, you know, and he says it best at, you know, that end point, you know, the whole, you know, you was this great nurturing, mother-like aspect to him. Saika, you know, pushed him to move forward. Sylvia told him never give up. And again, Charlotte's this belief in good in the world, you know, led to him believing, you know, you have to step up. You know, I forgive you for, you know, that led to him saying, you know, I forgive you everything you've done. Now step up and be your own man, to Hartman. So again, there's this much more, this harem is a bit more advanced, as you can see, than your typical, than most harem anime, and especially, you know, oh my god, this is, which, well, the closest thing we're comparing to it right now, since that's the most recent harem I've also reviewed. And I think it's good that I reviewed that and saw that, you know, again, that the fundamentals being taught there. And I think that's a good way to see it is, you know, first see, oh my god, and you see the fundamentals. I wouldn't suggest this after that. I would suggest a few more, but I think anybody who's willing to go that far, they can eventually get to and understand and appreciate what this anime has to offer, because these stories I'm talking about are done excellently. Again, the emotion, the music, everything really makes those stories believable. Again, I think the pacing is extremely well done. Again, the fact that you have these two, you have 12 episodes, and basically it's split into 2 6 episode arcs that I think are done extremely well. And then, of course, you have the comedy. And again, this is a harem anime through and through. It's a harem ecchi anime. I mean, there is plenty of gratuitous nudity shots. I mean, mind you, end of the first episode, Charlotte's on the balcony with a kitty, and she's got in there, and, you know, she's wearing this see-through, and you can clearly see the nipples of, you know, her nightgown. And in fact, that whole ending credit scene, again, they're shown nude. But like I said, I mean, and there's nudity, and there's, like, sort of sex jokes done in through and through. There's a running gag whenever the girls do something that make the guys basically erect, to put it in a better term. It's hilarious. You know, again, when he's trying to learn how to dance, you know, Charlotte bumps her boobs against him, and it's like, no, I can't let you see it. No, this isn't good. It just, it's done very well, and I find it funny. I think back to, I think it's episode 3, when Charlotte falls on him, it's like, oh, he's just like riding a horse. Of course, you can't see the motion I make, nor do I think you want to see the motion I'm making. But if you've seen this anime, you know the motion I'm making from that scene. I'm doing the same thing. He's like, and the look on his, like,
Lord, give me strength.
It's just absolutely hilarious. But, you know, the thing about it, like I said, is that doesn't fill the episode. Right? And they have, there are jokes scattered throughout the episode, but it doesn't, you know, they're all done at the right time, and they're all done excellently. And they all work very well. And in fact, the matter is, through most of the final episodes, there is very little, I mean, there's comedy, but like, episode 10, they have all this serious stuff going along, and paced every so often is, you know, they're all worried what we're going to do, what we're going to do, and they show, then they go back to Charlotte to see her taking command of the situation in her own way, providing, you know, fun and jokes, and of course, ultimately fan service as we get to see a shower scene, you know. And again, you know, people say, well, she's a damsel in distress, but, you know, even though she's captured, she doesn't act like a prisoner. She's still trying to, again, she's more of a politician, and she's still trying to gain control of the situation. And she does, as she's able to convince the two guards to help her out when she asks for their help on numerous times. But the big comedy scene, and I've, like, waited so long to talk about this, is episode 6, the Hot Springs episode. This is one of the most brilliant episodes of an anime ever. It's frustrating that this is such an advanced anime, because this individual episode itself, it's worth watching just on its own. My lips went, what did you say? No, that's not what you want to say. It's not worse. It's good. It's very good. It's so worth watching. Because essentially, this entire anime is making fun of the harem genre it's a part of. They constantly break the fourth wall throughout this episode. And there's so much gratuitous nudity, etchy nudity fan service. It's not even funny. And yet, just the constant breaking of the fourth wall, and it's so funny, and it's like such a, and yet there is a serious thing that happens at the end of it that it eventually leads to that is so believable because of that. But you know, they constantly break the fourth wall, you know. It starts off like the whole point of the episode is in the first arc, Tepe is trying to get accepted into the social club. Which, you know, and ultimately he's given the ultimatum by guy who's the president that, you know, he has to throw a party. Well, he finally gets an idea after a date with Charlotte in episode 5, you know, to basically take a group out on a overnight party to a Japanese hot springs. A commoner's vacation, since, you know, these are wealthy people. And so it's, you know, him, you know, Charlotte, Sylvia, Zachary, you, Zachary's two assistants, who are both female, and then of course Nori and two other male characters who you meet here and you meet in the last episode. In the last episode they had no lines. Well, one has one line, the other doesn't, I think. But yeah, this is really the only episode that they have really any major in Chinin, which we play off to, which I'll get to. But just, you know, the starting to where, you know, they have to go through the gate, you know, the subway gate to get to the train. And, of course, Charlotte and Hazelnik have never done this before. It's like, how do you do? We're so afraid. And then Sikri just, you know, flashes her public transfer card and, bleep. Oh, you did it so eloquently. And there's, you know, Debbie going like, wow. If that's all it took to get respect, I'd be president of the world just for how I traveled to school. You can become president just riding the train? It's like, oh god, give me strength. it's that great to retire, and it's like, this is freaking hilarious. And then, of course, the whole hot spring setup. Basically, they know he talks about it, and the girls know it, but they don't know that the plan is. Basically, the whole point of the hot springs is, you know, for the boys to become lucky perverts. And by lucky, they mean the accidental, oh my god, I didn't know, I must have gotten into the wrong hot springs, and now here I see all of you naked. It's like, it's so absurd, but it's hilarious. And they go into Hot Springs, and one can't take it, because he hears the girls play, he's like, I can't take it anymore, and runs full speed, hits the wall turns, you hear an absolute beating immensing, it turns, and there he is with Marker, and getting bruises, and having the shit beat out of him. It's like, go on without me. It's like, Mind you, the whole joke of Sylvia bringing her sword with her, because, like, if they try to peek, we'll murder them. It's like, you're looking forward to murdering them way too much. I could go on and on about, because there's so many of these little just hilarious scenes. The breaking the fourth wall, the intro where, you know, they're watching this anime, and then they cut out, like, haha, you thought this was a different anime. No, it's not. Like, who are you talking to? But what really makes this episode great is the whole, they're trying to build up, they end up running into trap doors and traps. Now, I understand that the most likely estimate is that, you know, Charlotte's butler set the trap beforehand. But I kept watching this, like, who owns this hot springs? Sasuke Sagara from Fullmetal Panic from Mofo? I mean, did they go to the same hot springs that they went to in that two episodes, or that one episode of Fumofo? I'm like, god damn it. And ultimately to, like, oh, let's watch our shooting star. Oh, there's a shooting star, and it's Tepe. If there's any time for someone to be a lucky pervert, I'm like, I can't believe you would do that. I'm like, he got launched in the air by a fucking landmine. And it landed in your springs. I don't think he definitely did that on purpose. No, he kind of did, besides this point. I love that episode. I love it. It's just absolutely hilarious. It's like, if there is any episode worth watching in this series, mind you, I think the entire series is worth watching, but in particular that episode. You know, final thoughts, I love this series. The characterization and the character building, it's just wonderful. This is a character-driven plot with great comedy and great ecchi comedy, mind you. You have four great female leads that you all connect to. I mean, just like I said, I played the game before. And again, each, you know, you have four different paths you can go, and each path, you know, ends up with has a different ending with a different girl. And mind you, in that game, they do a great job of really connecting to where you can see, like, it's one of those, like, oh man, if I was Tepe, I wouldn't know which girl I would want to fall in love with. It's just one of those things to where it's just a great connection with each character. There's a lot of great character development. The music is solid. The animation is beautiful and gorgeous. The acting is terrific. It's just, this is such an underestimated anime. I don't think many people know and can appreciate what this anime has to offer. It's just that damn good. So, at the end of the day, I give Princess Love... I mean, it's one criticism is that, like I said, it's a very advanced anime. This is an anime not for beginners. This is an anime for advanced animators. This is a anime for advanced otaku. Let's put it that way. You know, somebody who can really appreciate the genre, who appreciates the style, and appreciates the art of storytelling. This is not something for beginners, and that's really the one criticism I can really think of it. Is like, it's a great series, it's just not for beginners. So with that being said, I give Princess Lover a 4.5 out of 5. Again, it's what keeps it from being perfect is that it's not a series for beginners. It's much more advanced. And it's also, I didn't talk about this much, the ending. The ending felt a bit forced. I mean, Tepe and the girl's part felt a little bit natural, but just in the fact that the main villain and, you know, his whole story, it felt like that ending got a bit rushed. And I would have liked to see a bit more climactic of an ending there between him and Tepe. And then you add the fact that the whole, it just feels like he gets thrown into water and he ends up being by Jocelyn's side when she wakes up. And it's like, so this is a Disney movie. Our villains didn't die, they just got really bad boo-boos. You know, that along with the fact that it's for advanced viewers, that's what leads a half a point being taken off. I mean, literally both those two things individually take like 0.25 point off, leaving with a half a point off completely. So, and I don't know why I'm explaining it this way. So, 4.5 out of 5 for me for Princess Lover. I absolutely love it. And if you are an advanced anime viewer, and for somebody who has spirit, and more importantly, are looking to get towards more intriguing and more, you know, more thought-engaging titles than maybe, in particular, thought-engaging harem titles, I highly suggest this harem, ecchi, romantic anime. And mind you, it is a great romantic anime because you fall in love with these characters. So it's a great series. I highly suggest it. Again, it's going to be very hard to find. That's the really sad part, is that unless Crunchyroll brings it to over or somebody finally licenses it, it's going to be very hard to find your, on a legit level. The only legit level I think you'll have is with their imports. I'm lucky enough to still have, when it first came out, you know, I picked up the fan subs when they came out. So I was lucky enough to get it that way, as that was a time where I actually, you know, downloaded fan subs. Because again, 2009, Crunchyroll wasn't as big as it was now, along with, you know, Hulu and Netflix and such. So 4.5 out of 5 out for me. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any emails or comments or anything you want to leave the show, remember there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can email the show at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact the show through our Stitcher account, which again is updated. And by the time this is out, I will also at some point, tonight or next day of this recording's release, update these two new episodes. So you can find us on Stitcher.com to search for The Absolution Network. And you can find us on Facebook. Search for The Absolution Network on Facebook.com. Like us. And you can leave us comments by just giving a post or leaving a comment on an individual post. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the post on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, is included right here on the Absolution Network. That, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum, the Anicast, Shindiger Girls Wrestling video game related, and wrestling video reviews, John Ramos's voice acting, anime, and toku reviews, including Toku Apocalypse. And of course, all the other podcasts I do, including CMG's Wrestling Reviews, Tom's Top 10, and the Intergalactic Graphic Review podcast that I do with Edwin, which will have a new episode coming out shortly this weekend. And of course, make sure you check out all my other content on 132 Productions content. 132 Productions, this of course includes Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs that you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, while you're at any of these sites, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, along with Jeffrey Taylor and From Crisis to Crisis. My body's a state, what did you say? Because, you know, my lips move, but they lied. Spidey Dude and the Clone Sucker Chronicles, Steven Schlechter and the Critical Hit Podcast, and of course, Guy Gunner and the 2-2 Freaks Podcasting Network, along with many more. Check them all out. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, well, we start 2 weeks look of a very wonderful romantic series that is near and dear to my heart. The series is not too advanced, but not too basic. It's right there in the middle, and it's a wonderful love story and perfect for the month of February. Ladies and gentlemen, next week we cover the first season of Eri Ari Yuriyoshi. So until next time, my Tsunami Generation.
Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous.
Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.